Okay, good afternoon. We're going to get started. My name is Diane Derbyshire. I am here at Leading Age New York, and I want to welcome you to what you can do to protect your residents from the flu. As I think you're all well aware, this year's flu season has been the worst that we've seen in a long time, and so I think this information will be very helpful in ensuring that your residents and staff stay as healthy as possible. Before I hand it over to our colleagues in New York City, I just wanted to cover a few housekeeping items. We're going to be, in fact, we have already muted all the lines, and we are recording this so that we can make it available to others who weren't able to join us at this time. If you do have questions during the webinar, we ask that you use the webinar function to type in your question, and we will address it at the end of the session. Just want to thank our colleagues in New York City for working with us on this webinar. This is being offered to you free thanks to the support of an emergency preparedness grant through the Centers for Disease, for the CDC, I'm sorry, and our colleagues in New York City. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Marcia Williams, the Senior Director of Healthcare Facilities and Medically Vulnerable Populations at the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene Office of Emergency Preparedness and Response. Marcia, you need to just do star 2 in order to open up your line and introduce our speaker.
Good afternoon, everyone. As Diane mentioned, I'm Marcia Williams with the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene. I would like to thank Diane and Leading Age for hosting this webinar and for asking us to present. Without further ado, I'd like to introduce Beth Niven, who I've had the pleasure of working with at the New York City Bureau of Communicable Disease, as well as the Bureau of TB Control. Beth has been with the Health Department for over 27 years. She's our lead and subject matter expertise in influenza and has presented at numerous long-term care facilities on this disease. So I turn it over now to Beth to present and thank her again for presenting to the ACF providers.
Hi, good afternoon, everybody, and thank you for inviting me. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you, Beth.
Okay. So I'm going to talk about flu, what it is, what it does to people, and how you can prevent it. So I have some good news and bad news. The good news is that we're actually leveling off. We seem to have peaked, and for the last week or two, we seem to have leveled off. The bad news is that we've leveled off at a very high rate. So there's still a lot of flu here, both in terms of laboratory-confirmed flu, flu hospitalizations, flu in nursing homes, flu is everywhere. But we think that we've seen the light, and we're coming down a little bit. So I'm going to talk about what flu does to you. So our first slide, please. Oh, so I'm going to talk about different ways you can prevent people from getting flu, how to contain flu in your facility, what you need to do to report an outbreak, and what you should have in place to protect your residents from staff, visitors, and everybody else around them. Next slide, please. So this is a really great picture of what happens when you open up your mouth to cough or sneeze. Flu is a respiratory illness, and people get it primarily from droplets. Droplets are caused when people open up their mouths to, as you see in this video, cough, sneeze, or emit a droplet of spray. In that droplet of water particles are the virus particles. And the way that people get flu normally is if you cough or sneeze within 3 feet of somebody around you, your water droplets fall on that person's cheeks and the viral particles land on that person's cheeks. So what people do all day long, about 1,000 times a day, it's been noted, they rub their hands on their cheeks and they move whatever is there into their eyes, nose, or mouth. And that is one way how the virus gets into your body, through the mucous membrane in your eyes, nose, or mouth. So flu is not primarily aerosolized. It's usually droplets from this emission from a cough, sneeze, even talking produces that same emission of water droplets with the viral particles in there. So once you've been exposed to flu, The incubation period, the time between when you're exposed and when you come down with some symptoms is variable, but it's about 1 to 5 days. And the thing with flu that's interesting is that you can start shedding viral particles before you even appear to be ill or without being ill at all. So people, when they admit these water droplets with viral particles in them, that's known as shedding. You're exposing other people. Once people are exposed, they are then infected. So people shed by virtue of this coughing or sneezing. And you can shed, again, before you're ill, while you're ill, and as you're recuperating. Children tend to shed a little bit longer. We call children little flu factories because they get actually shed for quite a long time. And I'm saying this because you have to sort of think about what happens when children come into your facility. Some nursing homes have limited children under the age of 12 or 14 from coming in during flu season just for this reason, because they tend to shed quite a bit, even when they don't appear to be ill. So shedding occurs both among adults and really among children. And what happens also when some of these, see this water droplet immersion, people cover their coughs with their hands the way we were taught years ago. And we ask people not to do that again. The new cough etiquette is to cough into your sleeves, because when people cough into their hands, they're emitting the viral particles into their hands. The virus lives on people's hands for 5 minutes, which is a pretty short time, but not short enough. Once the virus is on your hand and you start touching things like doorknobs, elevator buttons, computer surfaces, the virus can live there on that hard surface for up to 2 days. So encourage people to really not cough into their hands, to minimize the ability of the virus leaving their mouth, going onto their hand, and then going to a hard surface. So again, knowing some of these things will really give you an idea of why we really stress this whole notion of cough etiquette and hand washing. So again, flu is primarily by droplets and to some extent by fomites. That's what happens when you cough into your hand and then touch your hand onto hard surfaces. Next slide, please. So flu is actually a really big deal. People often talk about whatever they get during flu season, they call it the flu, when they really mean that they have a cold or something else. But flu itself is really something that comes every year. And every year it has a potential really wreaking havoc in many ways. One is that about 5 to 20% of people get ill. So imagine in the U.S., 300 million people. If you think about 5% of people getting ill, you're talking about millions of illnesses every year from flu. Besides general illness, somewhere between 250,000 people are going to seek care and get hospitalized. And people are hospitalized either because flu affects the lungs and results in some kind of lung issue like a pneumonia, or flu could also exacerbate what people already have, and they can get complications from that and end up hospitalized. So every year, flu brings with it about 250,000 hospitalizations. Next slide, please. So in addition to hospitalizations, unfortunately, flu brings with it death. And the number of deaths, if that's a moving target, every year it's different. Somewhere between around 40,000 deaths average a year, which is actually the same as motor vehicle accidents, but every year it's different. This year, I think already we've seen close to 60,000 deaths, and we're only in February. And the deaths occur mostly in older people, but not always. We've had a number of deaths in children. In New York City this year, we've already seen 4 pediatric deaths. That's deaths of flu in children under the age of 18. I think nationwide, that number is around 70. Last year, we had 6 children die of flu. So again, every year people die of flu, they're very young, they're very old, and also people in between. And the people in between who die of flu may die because they have an underlying illness that they either know about or don't know about. And again, flu might exacerbate, make that illness worse, and people may die that way. So again, flu is really a big deal when you think about the fact that people get ill, get hospitalized to a great extent, and die in the tens of thousands. But also in terms of cost, flu is a very big cost. We're talking about excess hospitalizations, medications, loss of work life. So flu could exceed the billions of dollars every year. Next slide, please. And just to give you an idea historically of when flu comes, flu is here right now. Usually flu starts appearing a little bit sometime in November, December, and historically it's peaked in February, and then it's gone down, and flu actually doesn't leave us at all. We have flu year-round, but it's very, very little in the summertime. But we still see outbreaks in nursing homes sometimes as late as May. So flu really is around for about half the year, and the peak is sometime around January or February. Next slide, please. And just to give you an idea of what I do most of during flu season is I oversee outbreaks of flu in nursing homes. And this is just what we've had in the past 17 years. We had a couple years that were kind of wimpy with very few flu outbreaks. Starting in 2012-13, we started looking at different ways to identify flu outbreaks. And now in 2017-18, I think we've reached about 180 outbreaks in nursing homes alone since October 1st. Next slide, please. So I want to discuss a little bit, because this sort of impacts on you a little bit, how we identify outbreaks from congregate settings. So we rely on phone calls from people in nursing homes and assisted living facilities. Oftentimes, the hospitals will call us and say, we're seeing flu at a resident of X, Y, and Z, a congregate setting. We also call facilities, laboratories that do influenza testing, primarily the larger labs. Some of them test primarily nursing home residents, so we get a lot of information from them. And what we've done now that is really key to identifying outbreaks is what we call our bin match, and that's a building ID number match. When we match all our positive influenza results, laboratories, again, are required by law to report positive influenza results, and these are large laboratories. The hospital labs do this, as well as the commercial labs like Modern Diagnostic or Quest or BioReference Lab. So they have to report to us all their positive influenza results on a timely basis within 24 hours. And we then take that database and we match it against a huge data file of addresses of any kind of congregate setting, be it nursing home, assisted living facility, shelter, group home. Wherever people congregate is where we match that. Next slide, please. So every day we get an email that shows us this database of matches, and I use that to call up facilities and say, today we were notified about a flu case in your facility. So what I do every day is call up about 20 facilities, nursing homes, where there's been flu, and for many times, if the patient, the resident, has been diagnosed at the hospital, not at the facility itself, I may be the first person to tell the facility that they've had a case of flu. Oftentimes, facilities send out patients to hospitals for reasons that are not flu-like. It could be a fall, it could be confusion, it could be an exacerbation of an underlying condition. Hospitals, for the most part, will swab older people, and people coming in from a congregate setting, they'll swab them for flu and RSV. And if the patient is positive, we get that notification. So oftentimes I'll call the facility and say, so-and-so that you transferred out yesterday is now positive for flu. And the facilities will say, that can't be. He had no flu-like symptoms. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit later. So using this bin match is a very, very proactive, timely way to identify outbreaks in nursing homes and adult in assisted living facilities. Unfortunately, and this is just our issue, is that we have so many nursing home outbreaks lately that we've really been triaging nursing homes first and assisted living next. So if we have an assisted living facility with two or more cases, we'll call them up and let them know that they're having a cluster, and then we provide guidance for them. So again, unfortunately, our priority to date, just because of time, has been to call the long-term care facilities and then the ACFs as time permits. Next slide, please. So I want to talk about ways to minimize influenza transmission. And some of these ways are easier than others. So again, vaccination in both residents and staff is still key, despite all the media hype about the vaccine being good or not good. Vaccine can still really help curtail influenza transmission and other consequences. Infection control measures that we'll talk about later, respiratory etiquette that I alluded to, this cough etiquette, coughing through one sleeve, and hand hygiene. Next slide, please. So influenza vaccine, despite the effectiveness numbers from this year, it's still really the best way to prevent not just influenza infection, but complications and death. In fact, in nursing homes, influenza vaccine is only about 30% protective, a little bit more, in any given year in protecting people from getting influenza infection, but it's very, very effective in preventing complications and death. So again, influenza vaccine is still a really, really good way to minimize transmission and really minimize complications and death. Next slide, please. So again, I'm going to talk about residents primarily, but also think about whatever I say for residents also applies to employees. Employees are exposed to flu at work, so they could either get ill at work and bring flu home to their families, or vice versa. They could be exposed at home and bring flu into the facility. So again, the whole issue of vaccination should be something that should be thought about for employees as well. So as you encourage vaccine for your residents, also encourage that for your employees. And again, it's also a health benefit for employees. If you have employees that are in a high-risk group, that is people over 50, people with any even a huge number of underlying conditions, diabetes, heart disease, lung disease, et cetera, those people can get flu and then really progress to complications and something beyond. So again, encouraging flu vaccine is really key in both your residents and your staff. Next slide, please. And again, just really think about the fact that people can shed influenza vaccine before they're ill, before they have symptoms. So again, unvaccinated workers can be shedding before they have any symptoms, or or without having symptoms at all. It turns out that one out of four people are what we call asymptomatic shedders. That is, they have no symptoms, but they can still shed. And how do they do that? When they open up their mouth to talk or laugh or sing, whatever it takes to open up their mouth, they are also propelling water droplets out of their mouths with the viral particles in them. And again, people near them can be exposed and infected, even from people who show no symptoms at all. So again, influenza vaccine for residents and staff cannot be overemphasized. Next slide, please. So one thing that we do here, and we'll do it if we have time starting in August, is we go out to facilities and try to encourage staff and residents to get influenza vaccine by dispelling some of the myths. So one myth is that flu is no big deal. Next slide, please. And we tell people that flu is a very big deal. Flu can be very tragic. And again, even the numbers this year with the tens of thousands of influenza deaths among people at all ages, especially pediatrics, flu can be very, very tragic. So people will say, oh, flu is no big deal. There are people who confuse flu with things like the common cold. Flu can be a very big deal. It can make people very uncomfortable for a week or so, and it can make people very, very ill and beyond. Flu vaccine cannot make you ill. This is a very, very common myth, and it's actually the biggest barrier we found to people not getting flu vaccine. The vaccine is made of an almost very, very close to being dead virus. So it really cannot make you ill. It cannot replicate. And without viral replication, it's really hard to get illness. So people say flu vaccine can make you ill. It really cannot. There are people who get ill a little bit after the vaccine. That is a short-lived flu-like illness. It's not the flu, but it could be their body's reaction to the enhanced immune response. So again, we'd be happy to come out when this time permits to go out to your facilities and talk about the myths about flu vaccine. And then there are people who say, I don't need it. I never get the flu. My answer to those people is you only need to get the flu once to make you remember how really uncomfortable it can be. So again, and people who never get the flu vaccine can still make people around them ill. So again, I always tell people, you may never get the flu vaccine, and there are people who never get ill, but it may not stop you from causing other people around you to get ill. So I always encourage people who work in a congregate setting of any sort to be kind of responsible and get the flu vaccine, not just for themselves, but to minimize their ability to transmit and expose to the people that they're working with. Next slide, please. So I'm going to talk about some strategies to minimize flu transmission and exposure. Next slide. So the first thing you really have to think about is, what does flu look like in my facility? And again, most people think about flu as an abrupt onset of fever, cough, sore throat, and that's what most people do get. But older people don't always get this. For one, many older people don't mount a febrile response. They either are on Tylenol already, or for some reason have a very, very low, low fever. So again, don't look for fever as a marker for flu, because people can have no fever, no respiratory illness, and still have flu. And what does that look like? So what I tell people is, people who work with older people, they know what their residents are like. They know when their residents begin to act differently. And how differently? I say anything that deviates from baseline. And we look for things like very subtle things like a fall, confusion, altered mental status, lethargy, lack of appetite. But if you work with residents and you see a couple of them acting off baseline, especially during the period between October and let's say March, think flu and try to get those people swabbed. Either you do it yourself. I know that some facilities have their own rapid test kit, or you try to get the resident's physician to order them a swab. But again, knowing what flu looks like and knowing that it can be what they call an atypical presentation in older people, and just think something is different about this person. So if you see two or more people in a given week that are just acting a little bit weird for them, think flu and get them swabbed. And again, I know that a lot of you have very different levels of medical care in your facility, but who do residents tell if they feel ill? So again, that's something they should really be letting people know, who they can inform when they're feeling ill. Next slide, please. So your goal is to limit interaction between those that are ill and shedding, and that could be either the residents, the staff, or visitors, and people that are not yet ill. So again, this is called source control, minimizing the ability of ill people to open up their mouths to cough, sneeze, and shed in some way, either that way or through their hands. And again, vaccination is one of the keys to source control. Next slide. So again, there are certain things that we ask about source control in residents. One is, as soon as a resident is found to be ill, and they're not ill enough to go to a hospital, but they're in the facility, we want them to be put in their room and really, really try to minimize their movement out of the room. If they must get out of the room for some reason, either to go to a clinic or any other reason, think about if it's possible to have them wear a surgical mask. We want them to stay in their room. And again, CDC has a guideline that they want people to stay in their room for 7 days after illness onset, or 24 hours after symptom resolution, that is no fever, whichever is longer. So I know sometimes it's hard to keep people in their room for a number of days, but the key is you really want to keep people in the room at least for 24 hours after they have no fever without the use of any kind of Tylenol. So again, that could be a matter of days, and you really want to, because as long as they have fever when they leave their room, they are going to be shedding. And again, your key is to minimize shedding, because you don't want anybody who is not yet exposed to be exposed. So again, it's whatever you can to get people to stay in their room, you want to do that. You want to bring their meals into their rooms. You want to encourage frequent hand washing, tissues, have a wastebasket close to their room and make sure that they use a tissue once and throw it out. And if they and do whatever you need to do to keep them happy in their room, be it a DVD, whatever it is, but you really want to keep them in their room for as long as you can, with a minimum of 24 hours after their fever has resolved. Next slide, please. So I want to talk about this just a little bit more, because I'm really going to talk a lot about the fact that even though we really encourage flu vaccination, we know that vaccine is not enough. And here's an interesting thing about this year's vaccine effectiveness. I know you've all heard about it. The numbers are out there, and the numbers are 30, 36%. So the way it works is that this year, the flu vaccine overall is 36% effective, but it really differs by strain and by age. So flu vaccine, the vaccine effectiveness against flu A is in the 20s and against flu B is in the 40s. So again, your chance of having, your chance of getting ill is reduced by about one third or so overall, but it's reduced a little bit more if you're exposed to influenza B. Effectiveness actually varied by age, and it was seen that children actually had effectiveness in the range of 50% or more. So kids seem to get a greater protection from the flu vaccine than did adults. Unfortunately, it seemed that people over 65 had an even less protectiveness from the flu vaccine. So again, overall, 36%, it varies between the strains. A was less protection than B. Children had a really much better vaccine protection. People over 65, not so well protected. That's why all the things I'm going to talk about is really key, because the vaccine this year gave some protection. And again, the protection is going to be seen more in protection from against contraindications and death. So again, flu vaccine, no matter what the number is for vaccine effectiveness, it's still really, really worthwhile getting, again, to minimize flu infection, but it's really, really worthwhile to minimize complications, hospitalizations, and death, especially in people over 65, which is where the high morbidity and mortality is seen. Next slide, please. So for staff, again, the key is separating ill from well. So if staff develop symptoms while they're on duty, they should really go home. So again, they should report to supervisor and go home as soon as they can. And again, I don't know how your facilities work. I don't know what the staff shortage will be like if people go home. But you have to sort of build in some way to enable staff to go home. Because if they are ill and working, and no matter what they try to do to minimize exposing others, they will expose others. So again, the key here is, if possible, and somehow you have to figure it out, before flu season starts, you should really be making a plan of what to do if staff get ill. If multiple staff get ill, what are you going to be doing? Can you call in agency staff? So I'm really not sure what people's reserves are. But again, just think about the fact that you do not want an ill staff working. Even if they're going to be taking measures to protect their residents, they're going to be exposing people. And again, how long does staff have to stay home? And again, the key here is 24 hours after their fever subsides without being on Tylenol. So again, it could be 2, 3, 4 days. There's really no magic number except this magic number of 24 hours after fever resolution. So again, it's a good time to look at your sick leave policies to make sure that staff are not reluctant to tell you when they're ill. And again, this whole issue is source control to minimize the ill being close to the well. Next slide, please. So you have some leverage over your staff. You have very little leverage, or less so, against your visitors. Visitors are going to be coming in, and sometimes they're going to be coming in ill. So one thing we have is that we can have to send you large, colorful posters that say, visitors are welcome, but germs are not. We really want to make sure that visitors understand that they should not be coming in when they have these symptoms. However, if they do come in, it's really good for the staff to sort of recognize the symptoms and be encouraged to ask visitors to go home when they're ill. Again, visitors that come in when they're symptomatic are going to be exposing some people. Maybe a limited exposure, maybe a greater exposure, but they'll be exposing somebody. So you don't want visitors coming in when they're ill. If they must come in for whatever reason, and I don't really know what the reasons could be, offer them a mask. Encourage them to perform cough etiquette, which is coughing into their sleeve. Encourage them to wash their hands a lot, and encourage them to keep their visits short and limited, just to their one loved one, not to spread the wealth, so to speak. So again, you really want to minimize any ill visitors coming in. Next slide, please. These are the slides that we have. I can send them to you on PDF, and you can print them yourselves, or we can mail them to you. We have the slides in different colors and different languages. I think We have about 12 different languages, English, Chinese, Spanish, Urdu, Haitian, Yiddish, Russian, you name it. So again, if you need these slides to encourage visitors not to come in, we'd be very happy. Just call us, email us. We'll be happy to send you not an unlimited, but a number of posters. Next slide, please. So again, just getting back to visitors, somebody should feel able to politely ask visitors to leave. It could be anybody in your staff. It could be just one person. It could be that the receptionist can see a visitor coming in who's symptomatic and be able to call up somebody, a case manager or somebody, to come downstairs and have that person leave. And again, it's really something that you need to encourage people to think about, is having these visitors come in. And again, getting back to children, I told you that children are called little flu factories. And again, I'm not sure what your options are, but you can think about during a certain time of the year when flu is really rampant, to think about restricting visitors under the age of 14 or 12, especially those that are coming in coughing and shedding. So again, you might want to send a letter home to families telling them not to visit when they're ill, or not to bring a child in when they're ill. But again, your job is to protect the residents, and you want to protect them from any visitor coming in, exposing them in one way, and therefore infecting them. Next slide, please. So managing residents with flu. So again, I said if residents are fine, they could just be put in their room. No need to send to the ER. But if a person has underlying conditions and they have any severe symptoms, they should really go to the ER. And again, while they're traveling to the ER, they should be offered a mask. So again, I know that you have some facilities have a medical presence and some don't. So you really need to check with the medical provider on whether the resident needs to be sent to the ER, whether they can be managed well in-house. Next slide, please. Okay, and next slide. So again, just to recap, you want to have as many things in place as possible, especially given the fact that vaccine works to some extent, but not perfectly. You want to have signage for visitors, residents, and staff about the fact that they should not be coming in when they are ill. And also, we have the cover your cough poster that will show people how to cover the right way. Again, not on your hand, but into your sleeve. And this is something that you should really be encouraging. There is a really wonderful video that I think we'll talk about later. It's on YouTube. It's called "Why Don't We Do It in Our Sleeve?" And if you could just find that and put that in your waiting area or somewhere where visitors and staff and residents can see the right way to cough. Again, coughing to your hand is something we do not want to see. So you want to have signage for visitors, staff, and residents for both these messages. Do not come in when you're ill, and cover your cough. Figure out plans ahead of time about who do residents tell when they're ill, and actually, and who do staff tell when a visitor is symptomatic. Staff education, again, about the vaccine, about the different ways that they can minimize transmission. Visitor policy, sick leave, and again, surface cleaning. Again, just think about the fact that people are going to be coughing into their hands, because people are used to doing that. As much as we try to minimize it, people will be coughing into their hands and then touching things. So again, in your facility, you want to have your maintenance staff cleaning surfaces, but you want to really identify surfaces that are called high touch. And again, only you know what those surfaces are. One thing I can think of is elevator buttons and doorknobs. Those are seen as areas where flu virus can live for up to 2 days. So imagine people coming in, visitors or staff, coughing into their sleeve, into their hands, and then go into the elevator and touching that button. The flu virus can live there very happily for up to 2 days. So again, you want to think about maintenance or whoever cleaning those high touch areas quite a bit in order to minimize people picking up that virus in their hands. And then the way people do all day long is touch the finger that they've just touched to the elevator button can now be used to touch their eyes, nose, and mouth, and that's how flu can get in. So, and just think about other high touch areas. Could be the TV remote. It could be bingo cards. And I know some facilities have bingo cards that could be swabbed down. It could be computer terminals, the piano. Just think about areas where a lot of people touch and think about cleaning those areas. Next slide, please. And again, just reiterating how important it is to educate staff about all the different issues. And again, if you want to invite us starting in August, you could just call our number. And when we have time, we'd love to come up and speak to both the staff and visitors about and staff and residents about different ways that they can minimize food transmission. So again, for staff, washing hands with soap and water before and after each resident encounter and with resident articles. If there's no sink available, we really encourage alcohol-based sanitizer. Again, I don't know if you have them, but they should be around in the lobby area so that visitors can use them before and after each visit. They should be around that residents can use them and staff can use them. And again, you really want to make sure that all hand washing facilities are stocked with soap and towels, and that staff should be routinely trained in using the correct cleaning disinfection products. Next slide, please. And again, from the maintenance staff, you really want to be sure that you have surgical masks available in the reception area for visitors if they need them, that you have tissues, tissue boxes all over. You really don't want anybody using a tissue more than once. You want them to use the tissue once, throw it out in a receptacle that's nearby. You want to have the alcohol-based sanitizers available. And again, this whole issue of high-touch surfaces. Again, this is a good time to think about what is high-touch in your area, because every area differs. Next slide, please. And again, think about common areas where people mingle. And again, when we've seen clusters or nurse in assisted living facilities, we recommend that the ill people are in their room. You might want to think about it. If you have a number of ill people, that you might want to think about limiting activities, because when you have a number of ill people, it just means that exposure is taking place and that people walking around, they're infected and incubating. Incubating means that the viral particles are in them growing and they're not symptomatic yet, but they're still able to shed. So we've had a cluster of flu. We really try to encourage facilities to minimize group activities. So again, just for a little bit of time until the incubation period is over and you make sure that there is no further transmission of flu. So you want to stagger meal time. Some facilities, when they have a cluster flu or a flu outbreak, they have meals in the rooms. So again, I know a lot of people have different protocols. And again, I'm not sure what a cluster is defined as. We define a nursing home, a cluster is two. So once you have two old residents in a unit, we try to close that unit and really minimize any kind of mingling activities, be it meals, be it parties, be it anything, even physical therapy. We try to have physical therapy in people's rooms. So only you know what your facility structure is like and how people can accept or not limiting activities. But again, think about what you need to do to, again, source control to minimize interaction between those that are ill and those that are not ill yet. So I know that some facilities do have the ability to limit activities, to have activities, let's say, on different units and not large group activities. But again, only you know how your facility is structured. But again, your thought should be minimizing interaction between those that are ill, those who might be incubating, and those who have not yet been exposed. And again, it's a little bit easier in nursing homes. We have one central medical provider. When we have an outbreak of flu in a unit, we encourage the whole unit to get antiviral prophylaxis, which is going to limit them from coming down with influenza. In facilities where there's no one central medical director or medical provider, it's hard to provide prophylaxis to a lot of people who have very different providers. So again, you have to think about how would you handle an outbreak being actually two or more. You don't really need too many cases of flu in order to have transmission going on. So you really want to think about ways to encourage prophylaxis, either on discrete units or facility-wide if the outbreak is really large. But again, because every unit, every facility is different, you have to discuss this with your medical presence. But we really, in nursing homes, we very much encourage prophylaxis either of the whole, of one unit, or if multiple units are affected, of the entire facility. So that means that you have many people on prophylaxis for 14 days. And that really limits people coming down with flu and then passing on to others. Next slide, please. So these are the major themes. Again, I can't really emphasize it more than once. Source control, separating the ill from those that are either not yet ill or not yet exposed. Surface cleaning, dedicated equipment. I mean, this applies more to nursing homes, but also for you. Ongoing training of staff about what works in terms of minimizing transmission, and educating residents about why you're asking them to do the things that you're asking them. So again, residents might be very upset about the fact that you're limiting movement or activities for a number of days, and you have to explain to them that you just really want to minimize their ability to be exposed, be infected, and get ill. So again, ongoing education of everybody with flu is really key, and that education really is both about why you're doing what you're doing. Educating cannot be stressed enough about hand hygiene and cough etiquette. I know it sounds very simple, but hand hygiene and cough etiquette really go a long way in minimizing influenza transmission. Next slide, please. So what's in it for you in terms of what do you get out of doing all this enhanced education? It's your residents or your clients. You really want to provide a healthier environment for both them and for the staff. Cost containment, the sooner you nip, so to speak, you nip flu in the bud, the better off you are. So if you have one resident that's ill, you get that resident cohorted, you get them on Tamiflu treatment, you look at the whole unit as a whole, and you think about what you can do in terms of surface cleaning, hand hygiene, limiting activities. The more proactive you are, the better off you'll be. Without affecting the resident social interactions to a great extent. Again, we're talking about limited containment. You just need to do things for a number of days until the incubation period for flu is between 1 to 5 days. So if you've gone a few days without seeing any new illness, things can go back to how they were. Not sure how legal aspects of outbreaks work, but sometimes there are. And public relations, when you're proactive and show that you really care about your residents enough to put in place measures that will minimize transmission, I think that can only serve you well. Next slide, please. So again, if you have an outbreak, you can definitely call us. Here's our number. For those in New York City, you can call us directly. And if you call that number, it'll come to me as soon as you tell them that you're from some kind of congregate setting. If you're out of New York City, then you have the New York State phone calls. As far as I know, there's no specific reporting requirements. I know that, and I just called the adult care program today. They would like you to call us and get guidance from us about how to minimize transmission. When you call us, we'll both speak to you and send you an email spelling out the different ways to minimize both flu and GI illness, norovirus, because it's really very, very similar outbreak measures. And I think the Office of Adult Care Program in New York City just wants a phone call from them, from you, telling them that you've got flu, that you've called us. So again, no specific point.
This is Diane Derbyshire. I spoke with Val Dietz this morning, and she did ask if you do have an outbreak to notify both your regional office that surveys you, as well as your local Department of Health, rather.
All right. Okay. So we're happy to hear from you again. I'm sorry that during the flu season, especially now, we've had about 20 to 30 outbreaks in nursing homes a week, which means that we're on the phone a lot with nursing homes. And when we have time, we'll call ACFs that have clusters. Last year, we did a lot more calling. But if you call us, we'll be happy to help you. We never turn down a phone call, and we're very happy to speak to people. Just that there's only 1.5 of us, me and one other person doing this part-time. So there's some days that we're really on the phone all day long and can't get to everybody. So please just feel free to call us, and we'll be happy to help you. And that's basically it. And again, call us if you want us to provide you with posters or the PDF for the posters. Call us, not right now, but starting in August, if you want us to come out to your sites and give a presentation for both staff and residents about both flu vaccine promotion and different ways to minimize flu transmission with these very simple infection control measures. And that's basically it. So thank you so much for letting me speak. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you so much, Beth. This has been such helpful information. I'll just remind the participants now, if you do have any questions, please use the chat box feature on the webinar. Meanwhile, while people are typing, I'll just remind you of some upcoming events, because this is the first in a series of webinars that's supported by this grant. Hopefully you've received registration for the next one on March 5th on the profile application. And then there's another one coming up on March 14th, how to design, control, and document and evaluate an exercise. And then on April 18th, we'll have an in-person full-day conference. It's our fifth annual emergency preparedness conference for our New York City adult care facility providers. It is at a new location this year, the LaGuardia Plaza Hotel Hampton Inn on 10404 Ditmars Boulevard in East Elmhurst. And all of these events are free thanks to the support of the grant. So with that, I just want to check and see, do we have any questions? No questions. All right. Well, Beth or Marcia, any concluding remarks before we end our webinar?
I just wanted to say thank you, Diane, for hosting and inviting us to present. I hope the participants found it useful. And again, we're here if you have any questions to call the New York City number that appear on the last slide. And thanks again, and have a good afternoon.
Wonderful. Okay, we will send all of the participants an email that will provide you with a link to do an evaluation online. It's critical that we get your feedback. It'll also provide you with information as to how to obtain your education credit. This earns 1 hour of continuing education credit. And we will also include a link to a copy of the PowerPoint so you can have that information on hand. Thank you again, Beth, for sharing your knowledge and your time with us.
Thank you for having me. Bye-bye.